There's a grief that can't be spoken. There's a pain that goes on and on. Empty chairs at empty tables. Now my friends are dead and gone. Here they talked of revolution. Here it was they lit the flame. Here they sang about tomorrow and tomorrow never came. From the table.
I'm tempted to leave that play. That's a beautiful mood. It's time for a sense of place, and that, Empty Chairs at Empty Tables from, yes, Les Mis. That is a special piece of music for my guest, musician Josh Cake. Josh, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
That takes you back to a place.
It does. I was thinking just now, why would I pick a song that makes me tear up just before a radio interview? Good thinking, Josh.
Because you want to think Paris.
Yes, I want to think Paris. That song does remind me of one particular moment in Paris in a very formative year of my life.
Okay, here we go.
So I was 19 years old when I went to Paris, and I chose it for sense of place because it's a place where I grew up a lot. I felt there were a few events that precipitated that during my year in Paris. Some of that was work. I went there to work in French cabaret, and they really grind the axe hard there. I remember watching an interview with Gordon Ramsay where he talked about going to Paris as a young chef and how they worked him pretty hard there, and it was a very similar experience.
So that's an interesting insight into
that. Yeah, they the have high standards, I guess, for their restaurants and their cabaret.
So what did you learn as a performer in that hard axe grinding time?
Oh, I learned to focus on what you're doing exactly right now and not to think about the next line or anything. Just focus everything on right now. And it took a long time to practice that because we're drilled from quite a young age to focus on memory, I think, in a lot of performance.
Yeah.
And to focus on what you're doing right now was probably the biggest lesson that I took away.
And strangely, in performance, focusing on memory sort of throws you ahead. It throws you forward.
Yeah.
So out of the moment.
Right now is my focus all the time. I try to make that my focus.
All right. But back to Paris.
Back to Paris. that song reminds me of the November 13th attacks in 2015, because a friend of mine was singing that at the end of the night just before we went to sleep.
Right.
Yeah, so that is, I suppose, the big climactic story that links Paris to that song. And now that song always reminds me of that night spent underground, ringing the police in Paris and then bunkering down underground and getting a call in the morning saying we're all clear to move.
So where were you?
So I was at a rehearsal for a thing called the Poetry Brothel, where clients can come, meet all the poets, and then you go into a private room with them for a fee, and the poet reads
a quick sonnet.
Yes, exactly right. Every year, we knew that we'd get, you know, one or two idiots who take the brothel part a bit too literally, and we'd always have to kick them out. There was always some dodgy punter, but mostly it was people who really liked this artistic idea. I think it's spread to New York and it's in a few other places.
It's a great idea.
It's a lot of fun. And we had a rehearsal because we do present ourselves with a bit of pageantry, I suppose, at the start of the evening. So on Friday the 13th of November, we were rehearsing near the Bataclan, which is their theatre that got shot up the most. We were about 500 metres from there in the theatre district of Paris, which is what they targeted. And at about 10 p.m., we're done with our rehearsal, kissing each other gingerly on the cheek to say goodbye, as you do in Paris. And I had a bag with some Tim Tams and scarves because I was headed off to a bad luck party, ironically.
Straight out of the poetry brothel into the bad luck party.
Into a bad luck party. But I never made it because two men came running down the street. How are we for strong language if I'm translating directly?
Okay.
we're okay. So they came running down the street and they said, get inside, lock the doors. And we looked at them a bit funny. That's an odd thing to say. We thought maybe they're drunk. And we just stared at them and they said, no, seriously, get the fuck inside, lock the doors. That's my most direct translation of what they said. So we locked the doors and we got inside and we pulled out our phones and we saw
that. Saw what was going on.
Yes. And then the rest of the night is a bit of a blur. It's people checking the death toll, and it's 1, and it's 4, and it's 14, and it's 50, and it's 100, and it keeps going up. Everyone's calling their friends. We're on the phone with the police to say, stay inside, and then it's the military answering the phone after a little bit. And the guy who owned this cellar, he was great. He just opened up all the food and drink, and we stayed in there. Some people danced, some people sang songs, some people just sat quietly and ate or cried. And later in the night, it became evident we weren't going to go home. Yeah. So he pulled out some mattresses, and it was in this old preserved 16th century building, which is quite rare in Paris because a lot of things got redone in the 18th century. So we were downstairs in a cellar, bunkered down with mattresses and blankets, and we started calling it a bunker and saying, hey, doesn't this look like World War II? And then we realized,
no, not a good joke.
Yes. And then we realized, oh no, this is a very warlike scenario.
So now, is this your view of Paris? I mean, you the detail of your recollection is really precise, and that speaks of a really significant moment.
It is. I think it's not my total view of Paris. You know, there were lots of lovely days in Paris when we weren't afraid of being killed. But it was a moment where I think I learned a lot about people. I've never been in another situation where I saw what people are like when they think they might die that night. And to be around 30 people, some of whom I knew very well, some of whom I just met for this show, and to share that with them.
But
that
was one of those people was you.
Yeah.
So how did you respond to that? I mean, and did that surprise you?
I'd always wondered what I'd be like in that kind of scenario. Yeah. And basically, ever since then, because I do stand up when I'm not writing cabaret, I've never felt like I've got a tough crowd since then.
Because nothing will ever be that bad.
No, because that night, I don't know why I did it, but my instinct was to run around trying to make people laugh and just smile for a bit. That was my instinct. I was just trying to find something silly, usually really, really silly things, just to make them laugh. And I didn't really think about or process my feelings at all. And then I got home the next day, thoroughly exhausted. And then I realized I was sleeping about 16 to 20 hours a day for the next week. So I was very tired, but at the time I was just trying to make people laugh.
Exhausted but alive. And that's a significant... Well, I now get empty chairs and empty tables. That's... Yeah. I can feel the resonance of that.
When we were falling asleep, my friend Maria, she's half French, half Hungarian, speaks perfect English. She couldn't sleep. And she was off in one of the rooms in these cellars singing empty chairs at empty tables.
Yeah.
In English, because it's not part of the original French musical. It was added for the English version in order to give Marius, the character, and the audience a chance to process the tragedy
What's
of the failed
on?
Revolution.
Yep. Okay.
And it's not at all a part of the original musical, but it does correspond to the original novel, because in the novel, Victor Hugo describes Marius having visions and apparitions of his friends who are now dead, but he sees them in the cafe, he sees them around him. Yeah. So it's canonically accurate to the novel. And bizarrely for me, I was wondering, surely she'll sing something emotive in her first language, but she picked that English song that ended up being very emotive for me. So well done, Maria.
If I say to you, intensely funny and heartbreakingly poignant, with a core of sincere hope... What am I talking about, Josh?
I believe you're talking about my show, Foreign Woman.
I am.
Thank you very much for that plug. It's just played in Sydney. And that's a quote from a review, I believe.
There you go. So, Josh Cake, you've heard an extraordinary story from Josh at a time in Paris, but you can catch up with the man as he is now. If you're in Melbourne, Foreign Woman, it's on at the Melbourne Fringe Festival, September 24 to 30. It's on at the Butterfly Club. We'll whack a link up for you on the Blueprint website. Josh, that's a remarkable story and beautifully told. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me, Jonathan. It's been a pleasure.
Josh Cake, he's a musician, he's a songwriter, he's a comedian.